Welcome to
You Haven't Seen.
I'm Debbie.
And I'm Ashley.
This is a podcast where we watch movies everyone has seen but us, and then we talk about them. And today, April 1st, woo! We're doing a comedy, and so we're watching My Favorite Year.
Which, sorry, I'm jumping right in.
Okay.
I do feel like this is the one film, when you said the films that everyone else has seen, I feel like no one has seen this.
That's the thing. It's like, I have thought this as well, as I was thinking about this. I don't think a lot of people have seen it, but I think it's one that a lot of people should see. Yep. Based on the limited information I have about it. I knew about it. I knew, because I found out via you that this is, that this is one of the films that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg had watched in preparation for The World's End.
Yes.
And so it's like, okay, people I respect and admire this movie. It got bumped up on my to-watch list.
Yeah.
But then it never happened. But...
So, sorry, this film is very hard to find. It's not on Netflix. It's not on Netflix at all. Like, you can't get
really?
The DVD.
Well, we're getting it on Amazon, right?
Yeah, we rented it from Amazon.
Okay.
But, that fact that it's not on Netflix, I'm like,
a lot
whoa.
Of things aren't on Netflix.
Really? Yeah. I've never run into that, though.
A lot of things aren't on Netflix. Especially, like, speaking as a film student, when the teacher would be like, oh, just watch this film, find it Netflix. And you'd be sitting there and be like, but it's not on Netflix, though. Like, a lot of movies are not on Netflix.
Well, I'm talking about Netflix DVDs, not Netflix.
Oh, me too.
Oh, okay, cool. Just making sure.
I had DVDs all through college, just specifically because professors would be like, oh, you know, watch this movie. What? Okay, fine, I'll find it. Like, great. But, so anyway, yeah, that's what we're watching. I don't really know anything about this one, except for it has 5 stars on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which is extremely unusual. So, saw that and was like, my interest has peaked.
It's called My Favorite Year. Mm-hmm. It came out in 1982.
Yes.
It stars Peter O'Toole.
It was directed by Richard Benjamin.
Yes.
He has just the most boring name.
Easy there, Debbie.
Well, it's one of those two first name names.
Yes.
It's just like a... Peter O'Toole, Mark Lynn Baker, Jessica Harper, Joseph, how do you say his last name? Bologna? Bologna?
I think it's Bologna.
Bologna? Yeah, so those are the big ones.
Yeah. So I know a little bit more about this film because the reason that this film was suggested, because last time we had trouble finding a comedy that I haven't seen.
Yes.
And the reason that this film popped up was my dad was watching Turner Classic Movies, and it popped up, and he called, and we were talking, and he was like, well, haven't you seen My Favorite Year? He's like, I caught a couple of minutes. I thought it was really funny. He was like, well, have you seen it? And I was like, no. So I went online and Googled it, and I was like, why haven't I seen this film? And so that's when I suggested it to you to see if you'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes.
Well, because you...
I knew that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg listed it off in some interview.
Did you know about the Mel Brooks production company?
I did not know this was a Mel Brooks production until I talked to my dad.
Okay.
And then my dad was like, yeah, I heard it's based off Mel Brooks. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because
Because you love him.
I love Mel Brooks. And I know, and I, like, have seen everything. Or I've tried to, like, mm-hmm. see everything. But apparently he's an executive producer on this film, and it's kind of based on his time at Your Show of Shows, which is the Sid Caesar TV show he wrote on.
Well, cool.
So it's kind of based on that, and that's how I know about it. But yeah, so that's what I know.
Yeah, it's like we're going into this with, I think, the least information that we've had so far.
Yeah, like, I was surprised it came out in the 80s. Like, it was legitimately like, oh, I thought this film was so much older.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's no, like...
There's no taglines. Yeah, no.
So
let's just jump into it. Let's go watch the movie. And back.
Hello.
Just, I think off the top, it's safe to say that we freaking love this movie.
I love everything about this.
We just straight up were, we were both sitting in chairs, obviously, and, like, just falling out of, like, we were just laughing and so loud, and it wasn't a constant giggle, but it was we were dead silent, and then it was eruption of ha ha, we're just gone. This is one of the funniest movies I have ever seen.
Yeah, no, I love everything about this. Like, and I don't think I legit laughed out of pity once. Like, no. Every single laugh was just me doing
it was so funny.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And it's really, really surprising.
Yeah.
I stopped taking notes because I was like, this is too good. It's
my
too
notes ended up turning into me writing down quotes that I liked and that I shall integrate into conversations. Yeah, no, half of my notes are me just oh, that's funny. I'll write it down so I can just blurt it out. But this, I was thinking while I was watching this that, just knowing Edgar Wright, especially his editing style, you can see how that was influenced by this movie somewhat.
Yeah.
It's obviously not to the extent of, the whip pans and all that jazz,
right.
But the visual humor is definitely there. Like, this movie is funny in the writing, the performances are funny, the editing is funny. This is just a really funny movie.
Yeah.
No matter which way you look at it, from a technical film point of view, or if you're just watching it. This is a brilliantly funny movie.
Yeah.
So,
basically, I mean, the plot of the film is that Peter O'Toole is an aging action
matinee
star.
Swashbuckling.
Matinee idol, kind of like an Errol Flynn type.
Yes.
So, he's been in all the Robin Hood, Three Musketeers, all that, and he has to do a live TV comedy variety show.
Yes.
And he's an alcoholic and doesn't show up on time. And it's all about getting him to the show.
Yeah.
Basically, that's it.
And then the character,
Benji.
Yeah, Benji is a writer on the show and then is given the task of being Swan's handler.
Yeah.
For the week. Just, make sure he shows up to rehearsals, make sure he's sober, make sure he's here. And so that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
And then it's about their relationship. But I thought that a lot of things that were brought up in this, because Benji is a huge fan of this man.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that they brought up just, about fandoms is incredibly still relevant.
Yeah. I mean, there were some very touching moments where I was like, wow. And then we would have that joke, and it was just, done.
It also, I worked on a comedy, late night comedy show in college, but it really made me miss doing TV stuff, because it was a three camera setup in the studio. It was I don't know. So you were having flashbacks to theater the whole time.
Yes,
I was having flashbacks
to
TV the whole time.
I have had someone who might not have been sober, and I had to fix that problem.
Oh, I was I was just having flashbacks to TV stuff where it's because I was never up in the booth where the producers were as a job. Sometimes if I wasn't on camera, I would just sit up there because one of my friends was the EP. And just the whole when things are going wrong and they're just everyone's dead silent and they're just staring at the screen, just going 2, 3. So just switching between the cameras where everyone's so pissed, but all I can do is 2, 3, back to 2. I was like, haha. But okay, sorry. We can just go through it a little bit and then kind of meander and whatnot. This, like we said before, that's the plot,
Yeah, I mean,
so
it's kind of just getting to the thing. The opening.
Get
him to the thing. We got to go.
Yep.
The opening of this film has no context for the rest of the film.
Absolutely not, no.
It's the opening credits are so soothing and kind of an art deco, here's New York landscapes and the music.
Just the skyline. I have written down, these are very nice, but question mark?
Right, I was I have not, I've been up for a really long time.
Ashley has been up for a very long time.
And I was
I dragged her to the podcasting corner.
I was when the music started, I was this is lullaby music.
And then within the first 30 seconds of the actual movie, we hear 1954 was my favorite
year.
Oh, good. Here it is.
And they said 1954. This is how they dress in 1954.
Yeah.
This is how we did things in 1954. 1954 was my favorite year. Just in case you can't remember.
This was filmed before the 80s, right? It looked like a much older movie.
That's the thing. I feel like maybe... I don't know in front of me how this did at the box office, but why it's not more well known is because it came out in 82, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels super intelligent.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like...
It looks like that White Christmas.
Yeah. Like, it's shot like it is 1954. And then it's kind of just like that zany, like, we're going to open doors, slam doors, run around, like, Farsi type thing. But it's just a very weird... It feels more like if it came out now, it would be amazing. Because it's just, like, it's got everything
it's
now.
It's so funny.
Right. This entire podcast is just going to be us being, like,
be like, God, that this is funny really too. Funny. But, and then it was so, just, like, bless his heart, was, like, TV was live. We worked in 30 Rockefeller Center. We called it
30 Rock.
Oh, so did we. That's so cute.
There was a lot of times in this movie where we just both went, aww.
Like, when it was, like, Chinese food, right?
Right. Aww. Where's Brooklyn? Brooklyn's a whole nother place.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing. It was like, when they do go to Brooklyn, I was like, I really like how they see Brooklyn as so inaccessible. Like, guys, you have access to a car, and there's a bridge. Like, you can just go to Brooklyn.
It's not Staten Island. It's Brooklyn.
It's like, guys, even if the train didn't exist, that wouldn't be a problem for you.
Because you have the chauffeur.
Yeah.
But and then when they're like, this hotel room costs $200 a night.
And they're like, oh no. Like, that is incredibly reasonable.
I was like, I want that.
Different times. But, are the writer's room? In this, there's four writers. There's
the head writer.
Head writer, who takes 6 sugars in his coffee. That man does not need that much sugar along with the caffeine. He shouldn't be drinking coffee, period. But they're like, this is where you use 6 sugars, an extra large, and so of course it's like 8 ounces. I was just like, and there's 6 sugars in there? He's drinking syrup at that point. And then there's the girl.
Yeah.
Which I was like, right on. Awesome. There's always a girl.
There's always the toughest nailed girl who's just like, no, shut up.
Yeah, who's just tough as balls, and you're like, yeah. Damn straight you're not Mrs.
Who gets the best jokes, though.
Yeah, like,
like, the Dick Van Dyke show, she gets, like, the best jokes. But there's 4 writers. There's the head writer, the girl, and then there's the mute writer.
The writer that doesn't talk, and he just talks to the girl.
Yeah.
And I thought that was funny.
And then there's Benji, who I couldn't... He's the youngest person there, so I wasn't sure if he was, like, a full writer or, like, an intern kind of thing.
I think it's kind of, like, he's a junior writer or something. Because
he
was a writer.
On.
Yeah, because it's, like, his sketch got on, but then he's also the one getting him coffee. But I think that's just because he's the bottom of the totem pole.
Okay.
I don't think the whole intern thing existed yet.
Okay.
But, so, Benji has this crush on this girl, Casey, and I have written down, run, Casey, 3 times. Once because he was legit chasing her. The second time was when the lead after the show was like, here's $100, go buy something. Run, Casey! And then again when he was like chasing after her again. Just poor Casey, I guess, is the producer of the show's assistant.
Yeah.
And Benji has this creepy crush on her.
It's not creepy.
It's kind of creepy.
Well, the thing is, we get into this argument every single time. The thing is, we do not see, and this is where my head is always at with these things, is we do not see the initial meet.
No, we don't.
So, like, the thing is, like, she obviously likes him. He's just, like, he is...
He's just too earnest.
Right, like, he's just like, we're gonna get married, and she's... Yeah. If he would have stopped when they first met, and then maybe there was a moment when they first met.
Because they do end up getting together, and their relationship does get cute.
Right.
And because she has...
And she never gets, like, legitimately mad. She's always, like, kind of laughing through it.
Because on their relationship, later on in the movie, he's chasing after her. And she's like, no, I'm not going to go on a date with you. And she just screams, sanctuary! And runs into the women's bathroom. And he's like, Sanctuary. Nope. Yep. And then I looked after her. I was like, that was funny.
But the thing, that's just the way they treat each other.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he is harassing her.
Okay, fair enough. Friends. It's a cute creepy.
It's not creepy.
All right, fine. Anyway.
And I also think, I have a lot of thoughts about this, because she says she's not funny. She can't tell a joke to save her life. She is not funny.
Yeah.
And I think that she feels like when Benji embarrasses her, it embarrasses her even more because he makes a spectacle. Mm. And, like, for any other of the, like, the female writers, they could
joke about
it. But she just gets flustered.
Oh.
And then runs.
Yeah.
Poor thing. When she finally says, like, I'm not funny, like, there are unfunny people in the world.
Yeah.
She's funny, but she's funny when she's reacting.
Yeah. She has funny reactions.
Right.
I felt kind of better for her in that, because, I mean, it's kind of rough to be the least funny person in the room and be completely aware that you are.
So I don't think it's creepy. Okay, I think it's very loving.
It gets to be, like, when the movie ends, it's super cute. And when he asked her for dinner in a movie and they're just in the writer's room eating takeout, that was cute. I like that. Let's talk about the swashbuckler guy.
Alan Swan. Alan Swan, played by Peter O'Toole.
Yes.
Who and is an alcoholic. Like, in legendary.
Yeah. Is playing an alcoholic. But I really hope his drunk acting in this wasn't really drunk. Because that was so good.
The drunk acting in this film is one of hands down, I will say this is the best drunk acting I have ever seen.
Ever.
Like, World's End is pretty good, but this one is just...
It's so good.
So lifelike.
What got me was when they were on... They're on the roof of the apartment building, because they're like, let's break into Casey's apartment, because Benji needs to, and so...
And they're having a dinner party.
Yeah.
They're not just breaking into the apartment.
And so they're on the roof, and they're looking down, and Swan's like, we need to get from here to there. And I was like... Yes, this is just...
But the way he...
way he says it, you can't see that I'm trying to imitate him right now, but just the way that he's, like, doing it and swaying, and they're on the roof, like, looking down, like, yes, we need to get 5 floors this way. It's like, he's saying all we need to do is go 30 feet, but the problem is it's 30 feet down. So, like, from here to there. No.
But it's just like that... Leaning with the head, like head goes first, and then you're propelled forward.
Yeah, and when the way he gets there is he repels down the building via a fire hose.
Via Die Hard is what you're saying.
Yes, via Die Hard. And when he's dragging the fire hose away from the wall, that was just the funniest visual of a drunken person I've ever seen. Was his determined like stomping, like gonna get the fire hose. It's a fine line because. There's a degree of, like, just being, like, a toddler.
Yeah.
Walking around, but then also being, like, trying to be self-aware.
Well, I read something once that the best drunk acting was pretending like you're not drunk. Because, like, if you get drunk, you always try to overcompensate. And that's why you start to, like, act funny. And, like, you know, you either enunciate. But this is, like... He is an alcoholic. He is so famous that nothing sticks to him. Like, he just gets away with, like...
Whatever.
With whatever he wants. So he can stumble and slur his words and just, like, giggle.
Yeah.
And he could do that. So he flies in from London. Yeah. Or flies in to do the shoot. Is immediately lost.
Yes.
And wakes up with a random woman.
Well, because he wakes up and the first thing we see is a stuffed animal. And I have written down, dear God, did he sleep with a child?
I told you this was a comedy.
No, that's the first thing I was like, this is going to be like some Lolita thing. Where it's like, she's going to be technically an adult or just whatever. I was like, what is happening? But he didn't.
No.
It's fine.
So we immediately see him, like, he just got in town, drunk, slept with a woman, and then shows up.
A flight attendant there.
And a flight attendant roommate.
Yeah.
And then shows up late to the meeting, with all the writer's room.
And his driver.
Alfie.
The producer is all like, why didn't you take him here immediately? And Alfie's like, When he's in the car, he's the boss. I go over, the boss tells me to go somewhere else, I go somewhere else. Like, that's what I try to stand by. And it's like, oh, I like you, Alfie.
You got Loxy, kid.
Yeah.
So he, like, will burst into the meeting, drunk as a skunk. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, he's drunk, like, we're gonna cut him. And then he's like, if I were drunk, could I do this? And just somersaults onto the table and knocks himself out.
And then the female writer goes, well, we know he can do that. Oh, no. Was it the female writer or was it the host?
I can't remember.
I think it was the host. Someone has the line of, well, we know he can do that. It's like, bravo. So this is when Benji sticks up for him.
Yeah.
And because, okay, King, the star of the show.
Kaiser King?
Kaiser King? I don't know. I'm just going to call him King. We're going to know pseudonyms.
Yeah, King.
King is, he's constantly worked up about something, but he's extra worked up because they want to cut one of his funny sketches where essentially he's making fun of someone in the mafia. And surprise, surprise, they're not happy about it.
That was the weirdest subplot of the film. I know. Because it's, like, legit a interesting character, like, retrospective of seeing, like, how it is to be famous and how alcoholism affects you. And then there's this weird subplot where it's, like, all the mobsters are coming, well, the mobsters are coming.
They needed a threat so that Swan could come in and save the day. But there were so many other ways they could have gone about doing that besides this weird mafia thing. But
it resolves itself so geniusly that I'm, like... Oh, I don't know how else you could have done this. Like, that's genius. Yeah, like, but at the time, I was just like, I feel like
until you find out how it is resolved, you're like, what are they doing?
Because every so often, they would just be like,
oh, by the way, don't forget about this. Like, well, because
he's really funny, but...
The mafia is all like, I'm in the removal business. If I see something I don't like, I remove it. And then they're like throwing each other's stuff out the window. They're
removing their stuff.
Yeah.
And threatening each other.
So the entire movie, the host of this show is in trouble with the mafia.
Yeah, and they keep like dropping hints. Like they hijack the set so the set doesn't get to the truck or to the studio on time.
A light almost fell on him.
Yeah.
And then let's just jump ahead with the subplot and follow it.
They send the day of the show, he gets a threatening letter or a threatening bouquet.
Well, because it's like, oh, there's a bouquet set up and there's a cloth over it in his dress room. Oh, let's see what's underneath it. And so he whips it off and it's this black wreath that's creepy as hell. And what does the banner say? It says, like, you've been warned or something.
Yeah, or you're asking for it.
Yeah. Maybe you asked for it. we're just like, oh my gosh, he's gonna die.
Yeah, like, it's so weird. And then you see, like, four creepy, like, you know, just, like, tough guys, what? Like, sneak in. Did you see
one of the tough guys was balding? And I was like, this is fascinating to me that it's like, yep, let's get some middle-aged Italians in here. We can throw them at them.
Yeah, so they get these middle-aged Italian mobsters to come in. And then...
very stylized.
Just, like, backstage of a live show, they sneak in and kick the crap out of
and they go behind the set and the audience is going yay because they think it's a joke,
but like they like I just don't understand how like everyone like I get that there's no a lot of people hands? Right and then like they're beating up the host of the show and everyone like you see a couple people like jump in and be like hey and then they're like well I'm out
because I was watching this going at least on our show in college, whenever the host wasn't, like, in the studio up to 15 minutes before the show started, it would be like a, where is he? Where is he? Do you know where he is? Where is he? And so I was like, how is no one like, gee, I wonder where the host of the show is?
Or just, like, checking on him. Because, like, the one, like, stage manager, like, person sees him and, like, comes in on the fight and is like, whoa, no, no, and, like, runs.
This seems like a personal problem. Got him mosey my way out of it.
And then everyone in the booth is just like, what's happening? What's happening? And I was like, that dude saw.
This man knows and he's not telling anyone.
And then they, like, bust through the wall, and there's a legit fist fight happening on stage.
And then while this is going on stage, the man who doesn't speak or just goes, what does he say? Oh God, this makes me so happy. And I was like, this man is all of us. And that's the only line he gets in the entire movie. And that was hilarious because then the next shot is a wide of the rest of the booth. And everyone's just staring at him and not saying anything.
No.
And then it cuts back to the chaos on screen.
It's
hilarious.
I know you talked about the editing before, but the reaction shots in this film, it's like every joke, if a joke needs to land, they will legit like stop the film and be like, all right, good.
Oh my god, it was so good. I'm going to buy this.
So let's get back to Alan Swan, because he's my favorite.
Okay.
So, how they take him to the hotel room. So he gets drunk, does a somersault, knocks himself out, and then they take him to his hotel room, and they have him strapped.
They have a suitcase on a dolly, and then he's sitting on the suitcase tied to the dolly like a chair.
But the thing is, I was like, why did they do that? Like, is he a... Like, did he try to do a runner? But then I realized he can't sit up.
I'm sure he tried to do a runner anyway. But he also can't sit up. And then when they're holding him up the stairs, he starts, like, conducting and just humming. I'm like, that's it. That's it. In the event I am ever in a wheelchair, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to get an orchestra in my head and be like, da-da-da-da-da.
It's next time, I have to, like, carry the trolley up the subway stairs. Are you just going to be behind me? But, like, driver has been with him for, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
And he has a drunk suit made for him.
That just rips off. And then, because Swan also says, where he just goes, how did I get here? Begin at the airport.
Right. Wow! 24 hours ago! Yeah.
And it's like, he does remember some of it, but just the fact that he's like, wait a second, start at the very beginning. What has happened? And this is what I have written down. Oh, this is a movie about a handler. Oh my gosh. Oh, and then, because in the hotel room, he tells Benji, where it's like, you know, I admire what you said about me. And Benji goes, but you were out. He's like, yes, but there's out and there's out. And I'm like, yes, sir. You are absolutely right. There is out and then there is out. Like, my good man. You are 100% correct.
And this is the podcast where Debbie and I come out as our colleagues.
I think we found a new spirit animal, though.
I will 100% go to my grave saying that that man, if I had an unlimited income, I am 90% sure.
Oh my gosh, I would just become him.
Oh.
I don't think I would be as sad because I don't have a daughter that I can talk to, but...
I have other demons.
All right. Oh my gosh.
So then they go to dinner at the store club. Debbie got all emotional.
I did get emotional.
Tell your story. Okay. About how you got emotional.
I got emotional because they're at this really fancy dinner.
The store club.
And this man comes up to Swan and is like, hi, I'm really sorry to bother you. It is my 40th wedding anniversary and I'm here with my wife. It would mean so much if you could sign something or just come by and just say hello to her.
On your way out.
Because he's like, I don't want to interrupt your meal. He was very respectful. Very I was like, nice. Everyone, fans, take note. This is how you approach someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swan's like, well, why wait? Let's go now. And he walks up to her. And, I mean, he's doing it because he's trying to also, like, hit on the playmate. And was like, Benji, we need a diversion. Like, this is, like, plan is go.
There's just a really attractive-looking woman.
Yeah, we find out later that she's a playmate in the newspaper.
No, that was just his playmate.
Oh, I thought it was, like, a Hugh Hefner thing.
No.
That didn't start yet in 54. Got it, sorry. Okay. Whew. Anyway, well, because in my mind, I was like, oh, 82, that was around, right?
No, I don't even know when like, it was started. Just Swan and his playmate.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
No, it's cool.
Anyway, so he goes over to the older woman,
mm-hmm.
and he asks for, like, permission from that, like, do you mind if I share a dance with your wife?
With your lovely wife.
With your lovely wife. And she's just, you look, and it's like, you know that she is the biggest fan of this man, and she's just so happy. And I, this is when Ashley was like, oh, you know, on Debbie's 40th anniversary. I thought that that was her dad, though. And then it was like, he took my girl. And I was like, oh, girl, run away.
No, I think, because he looked like maybe he was a mobster as well.
That's true.
And so when the waiter was like, don't do this, like,
yeah,
that's not good. I was we angered the mob again.
That's true.
But I think it was just like a,
yeah,
some like business dude.
Okay.
Who took like this pretty girl.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So then we find out that they
went swimming in Central Park in a fountain, right?
Naked.
Oh, okay.
And so they were arrested by the cops. Yeah. And then
they're treating it like a parking ticket.
Yeah,
right?
They just gave him like a parking ticket for swimming nude in
the fountain. Must be nice.
So he gets in trouble again. Benji does, for losing him.
Yes. And then this is where this is where Benji chases Casey into the bathroom, and we have like the funniest joke in the movie.
We rewound it to watch this joke.
Because this is, she yells sanctuary and goes in the bathroom. He runs in after her. So it's now those two in the bathroom, and then there's a lady in the stall who is just repeating, like, she says in response to what Benji said, and then Casey's just like, yeah. Like, this whole conversation. And so then they leave, and Swan comes in.
Because he's like, oh, I must go to the bathroom. And yeah, just walks to the ladies' room.
Yep. And then the old lady's in there, and she's like, this is for ladies only. And then, because he has, you hear the zipper, like, his dick is out at this point. And do you remember what he said verbatim? Because I don't. Where it's like, and so is this, but sometimes I have to.
No, I, let me see if I can get the exact, like, because I can't remember the second part.
This has to be a number, but it's like, but sometimes I have to run a little water through it.
Yes. So the lady says, this is for ladies only. And Alan Swan goes, so is this, ma'am. But every now and then I have to run a little water through it.
And then it cuts to the old lady and she goes, like, just an understanding face. And then the next cut is a close-up of two hot dogs. And it's just like, slap. Just, we lost it. Like the reaction and the slap, like just the all everything together, I was like, I'm dead.
But as like as two feminists, you could have heard a pin drop when he went in the ladies' room
and whipped out his dick.
And like Debbie and I both were like, and I just was like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, this is like another movie.
Everyone was just kind of on edge.
And then the punchline came, and it was just the most joyous laugh that, like, oh, this isn't a sexual assault.
This is a very quippy, funny line.
Right.
Combined with the funniest combination of reaction and then the first shot of the next scene. Like, as, oh my god. Yeah, so that was hilarious. Because I was like, this is going to be some sex joke.
Yeah.
Like, and it kind of was, but then it wasn't about that.
No.
You know, it just, it was, we rewound it and watched
again. We did. It really made me.
Yeah.
Like, as two feminists, you could have heard a pin drop when he went in the ladies' room.
And whipped out his dick.
And like, Debbie and I both were like, and I just was like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, this is, like, another movie.
Everyone was just kind of on edge.
And then the punchline came, and it was just the most joyous laugh that, like, oh, this isn't a sexual assault.
This is a very quippy, funny line.
Right.
Combined with the funniest combination of reaction and then the first shot of the next scene. Like, as, oh my god. Yeah, so that was hilarious. Because I was like, this is going to be some sex joke.
Yeah,
like, and it kind of was, but then it wasn't about that.
No.
You know, it just, it was, we rewound it and watched it again.
We did. It really made me.
Yeah. This is when he sends her a note being like, Benji sends Casey a note like, I'm so sorry, dinner and movie tonight with no funny business. Which, he cut up, like, letters from a magazine and taped them.
But he put them in a miniature of a bathroom, which I thought was really cute.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, she knows who it's from. You could have just written her a letter instead of the whole, like, serial killer magazine thing. But, you know, maybe that wasn't a trope at that time. And this is the whole she doesn't think she's funny bit.
Yeah, and it was just really sweet to see her, like, struggling with telling a joke and stuff, and to see him being like, well, no, this is how you tell a joke. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very, like,
it was sweet,
and it was cool to see someone who was like, I'm not funny.
And it was nice because she even, like, addresses the, like, where's this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I like this guy. But basically being like, you're really awesome when you're normal, man. Can you just do more of that?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, she just keeps looking at him, and that makes me think that before, like, he became, like, maybe they went on one date or something.
I think maybe it was like, oh, he's a cute gay at the office, but oh my gosh, I'm always so embarrassed whenever he's around. Like, why is this happening? It was it's very sweet.
Yeah, and I love that she was just like, you're great when you're not loud and, you know.
He was quoting along with the movie.
I love that. I was that.
Like, you shut up, mister. Do not talk during the movie.
Oh, you're going to have fun in a couple months when we do my favorite movie.
Oh, God. Oh, I know. I'm pretty, like, just mentally like, maybe I'll watch it twice.
I don't talk out loud. I just sit there and like.
Oh, that's good. You like go, when you know a joke is coming because you're like, wait for it. I'm like, oh, something funny is going to happen.
No, my favorite movie, there's so many jokes. If I did that, I'd be tense the entire time.
Okay. But, and so, is this when,
The next thing I have is that they go to
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is this Brooklyn?
I did want to say, because before that, there's like, oh, it's the last rehearsal before the show. And the host of the show is like, I want to say something.
King. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that it's so funny because he goes this build of like, you know, I'm a big fan. I didn't want to do this. But, and he pauses and I'm like, he's going to say, but it's nice. And like the New York voice. And then that's exactly what he did. I was like, called it. But yeah, so then they go to Brooklyn. And I really like how Swan is just playing along. Like, oh, this writer wants me to have dinner with his family in Brooklyn. Right. Let's go. Let's get the car. Bring it around.
Yeah, and so they have dinner with his mom, who married Rookie.
Yeah.
A lightweight boxing champion. Who's now his stepdad.
Mm-hmm. And Swan has seen fight.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, they invite over, like, his uncle.
And which I think they live upstairs. Yeah. It's, like, it's his mom's apartment building.
Yeah. And then his aunt, like, all the women just show up, like.
Dressed to the nines.
That's the thing. It's, like, this is a huge celebrity who's, like, coming in. So they, like, all go out. And, like, the mom, like, really dresses nice. And then Aunt Sadie walks in wearing her wedding dress.
I only wore it once. Like, what?
That's the thing. I was like, Sadie, dear, I love the dress. Maybe not the veil.
Maybe you could have left the veil at home. Just maybe. And then, because it's just, I don't know if any of you are familiar with what was popular to wear a tiara or a headdress-wise in the 1920s, but it's, like, it's very prominent, and it looks very strange, and it's, like, all out.
Yeah.
And, yep, she's wearing one of those to dinner with a famous person.
No, and then it got real at dinner. And, that's... Because his mom, like, took Peter... Like, just sat down with Alan Swan and was like, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah.
Like, she's like, this is real. Like, this is real life. Sitting down to a dinner with your family.
Yeah.
Like, a home-cooked meal. And then he, like, reveals that he has a daughter. And she's like, well, shame on you for not visiting. And I was like, whoa!
Man... Oh, shots fired.
Well, the thing is, like, that's...
It's a very mom thing to say.
I was going
to
say, that's what moms do.
And she just met him, and then she was like, sweetie, what you doing with your life?
Yeah.
Hmm? And he's like, I don't know. And she's like, huh?
It was very no-nonsense.
Yeah. So then, once they leave, he's like, where is my car liquor? And his driver gives him a briefcase, and then they get drunk, and that's when they end up on the roof, and the whole, like, rebel thing happens.
He does not say, where's my car liquor?
I mean, but he kind of does.
Yes.
I mean, that's what he's asking for. He has his drunk suit and his car liquor in his suitcase liquor. Right. But emergency
is, liquor. He's a classy guy, Debbie. He's not walking into places going, where's my car liquor?
I'm paraphrasing. Let me be clear.
So then they get drunk. And this is the best drunk acting, possibly. The best. And then, all right, so this is the part where he doesn't talk to his daughter. Mm-hmm. He comes back.
Gets all dolled up in his Three Musketeer duds.
And then realizes that this is a live show.
It's live.
It's being broadcast to like 20 million people. And there's an audience. And he is not an actor. He's not an actor. He's a movie star.
Yes.
And he had a very traumatizing experience on stage where he had one line and he forgot the one line. Yes. Which we've all been there. And so he can't do it and has like a panic attack basically.
And while this is going on, all the mafia stuff is going on.
Right, so Kane is getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Kane's like pretty strong.
Yeah. Like he's taken down like four guys.
Right, he's holding his own.
Yeah.
So they're all...
They're all middle-aged.
Right.
Yeah.
But they just kept him back up, though.
Yeah.
They're all brawlers, so the brawl's going on. Swan is having a nervous breakdown outside.
Like, he drinks like an entire handle of something and leaves.
Yeah, and so he runs, and then Benji chases after him, and Benji is fired because he couldn't keep Swan.
No, he lost the bet.
He lost the bet, but then as he was running away,
oh, okay.
The head writer was like, you'll see if you ever work here again.
Oh, okay.
So kind of fired, but not really fired, but kind of fired. Mm-hmm. But definitely lost the bet.
Yeah.
So then...
Which was for a week's salary.
A week's salary.
So it was like, no, small pittance here.
No. So then Benji chases after Swan, and they have a huge argument on the sidewalk, and he calls him a bum and says he's afraid. Mm-hmm.
And then the driver refuses to drive him away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I was like, yeah, Alfie.
Yep.
So he's like, no.
Yep.
And then...
So he goes back up and is like, you're right, I'm a bum, but I'm scared. And then Benji basically says, like, no one's that good of an actor, man. You meant a lot to me, so there is definitely part of that swashbuckler in you.
Yeah, like, he's a hero. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always the good guy and always... So it has to be something. And then the brawl has spilled onto the stage.
Yes.
And so they're fighting in front of the cameras. Like, Kane is... And no one is, like, realizing that this isn't real.
Yeah.
I feel like even the producers are like, what's happening? What's happening?
Well, I think they're just like, what is happening? Like, I don't think it's a what's happening. I think it's a what the hell
is
happening. We can't do anything. Because it's live TV. Like, we cannot cut to a commercial right now. And that's when they're just going to. Like, where it's like, God, what?
So, like, and the audience is just eating it up. Because it's actually really funny. Because it's like, the one guy gets hung up on the coat rack. And so he's just, like, dangling from the coat rack.
Comes in and starts just, like,
tap dancing and then just punching.
And the mafia guy just stared at him as he's being punched, just like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
and then the tap dancing.
Like, the female comedian who's kind of like the gangster's mold just starts, like, kicking him with her heels.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It's a good show.
It's a good show.
Like, it looks legit, but it is literally just a brawl.
Yeah.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, Swan comes out in the balcony and everyone sees him and starts, like, pointing at him and stuff.
Cameras pan to him.
And then he grabs a rope and swings onto the stage.
And then takes out his sword and starts fighting them. And so they win the fight and everyone's like, yay! And applauds. And then this is when he's on stage swinging around is when the guy goes, oh God, this makes me so happy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. Yes, it does.
No, I mean, it's a really good fight. Like, this, like, fight scene, and it has, like, really great comedic moments, because there are times where, like, they sync up their punches and stuff, and it's really funny. It's a good fight.
And then that's kind of where the movie ends.
Yeah.
Because you see Swan on the TV screens in the studio, and then there's, you know, voiceover being like, oh, this is how I like to remember him.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a standing ovation. Everyone's, like, loves him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, he looks happy.
Yeah.
And content. Mm-hmm. And we learn that they did go to see Tess. And he and Tess talked like nothing. They saw each other yesterday. And
Yeah. Like, and then that's how it ends. It's a very feel good.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know much about what happened afterwards, mm-hmm. but we know that everyone's like, yeah, he was a jerk and an asshole, and but he always made you.
Yeah, because like, he was like,
you always forgave
you
him.
Always, you forgave him a lot. Like, I guess you have to, which makes me think that their relationship continued after this crazy week.
Probably.
Know? Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my favorite year.
Yeah. It is definitely safe to say that we would both highly recommend this movie. It's so funny.
It is. I'm surprised. I can't put into words how surprised I am with this film. And how sad I haven't seen this film until now.
It's so good.
It's so funny.
Okay, so I guess to pretend like you've seen it,
you should know it's about Peter O'Toole, or Peter O'Toole is in it.
Yes, you should know Peter O'Toole is in it. I think you should know that there was, like, Mel Brooks' production company did it.
Yeah, I was reading a couple things about this, because I told you originally, mm-hmm. and then I just saw something on IMDb. There was a story floating around that this is based off Mel Brooks' time on Your Show of Shows, mm-hmm. and his dealings with Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
Who, and possibly, like, John Barrymore, who was also, like, a raging alcoholic. Like, those kind of people coming onto the show. But Mel Brooks has said that the writers had very little interaction with the stars.
Yeah.
So would that have happened, you know? So it's not necessarily like a, oh, that is Mel Brooks. Yeah. That is Errol Flynn.
But I think, like, aspects of the character, you know, it's like, oh, it was based on him.
Right. You know, like King Kaiser, Sid Caesar.
Yeah. But I think you should know it was produced by his company.
Yep, it's a Brooks Film production. Or he was executive producer. I'm not sure Brooks Film was around.
What's a third?
best drunk acting ever. Basic plot.
Yeah, I think basic plot was...
So just...
And basic plot being writer of a TV show is in charge of the star for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this film is pretty straightforward. I mean, the jokes are what make this film. Mm-hmm. The jokes make this film. The writing makes this film.
Yeah, because the plot is very simple.
Yeah.
The writer of a TV show has to follow around the crazy star, like a crazy movie star, for a week to make sure that he will appear on the show. That's the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no basic plot.
Yeah, I think that'll get you through it. Because, I mean, I do think this is probably the first film that we've done where not many people... I hadn't heard of this film until my dad was like,
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
But...
I never fully went out and got it.
This is the first one where neither of us have been like, yeah, I haven't, you know, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
But...
So, but I would highly recommend this mm-hmm. film. Like, I will invite you over to watch this film.
We will drag you to Brooklyn.
Where is this Brooklyn?
Land far away! But, yeah.
What happens in this Brooklyn?
So, this has been
You Haven't Seen!
I'm Debbie.
And I'm Ashley. And tap dancing and then just punching.
And the mafia guy just stared at him as he's being punched, just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and
you
then the
tap dancing.
Like, the... female comedian who's kind of like the gangster's mold just starts like kicking him with her heels.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It's a good show.
It's a good show.
Like, it looks legit, but it is literally just a brawl.
Yeah. Yep.
And then all of a sudden, Swan comes out in the balcony and everyone sees him and starts like pointing at him and stuff.
Cameras pan to him.
And then he grabs a rope and swings onto the stage.
And then takes out his sword and starts fighting them. And so they win the fight. And everyone's like, yay! And applauds. And then this is when he's on stage swinging around is when the guy goes, oh God, this makes me so happy.
Yeah.
And we're like, yes. Yes, it does.
No, I mean, it's a really good fight. Like, yeah. This, like, fight scene. And it has, like, really great comedic moments. Because there are times where, like, they sync up their... punches and stuff, and it's really funny.
It's
it's a good fight.
And then that's kind of where the movie ends.
Yeah.
Because you see Swan on the TV screens in the studio, and then there's, you know, voiceover being like, oh, this is how I like to remember him.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a standing ovation. Everyone's like, loves him.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks happy.
Yeah.
And content. And mm-hmm. we learn that they did go to see Tess, and he and Tess talked like nothing. They saw each other yesterday, and
And then that's how it ends. It's a very feel good.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know much about what happened afterwards, mm-hmm. but we know that everyone's like, yeah, he was a jerk and an asshole, but he always made you.
Yeah, because he was like,
you always forgave
him. You forgave him a lot. Like, I guess you have to, which makes me think that their relationship continued after this crazy week.
Probably.
You know? Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my favorite year.
Yeah. It is definitely safe to say that we would both highly recommend this movie. It's so funny.
It is. I'm surprised. I can't put into words how surprised I am with this film. And how sad I haven't seen this film until now.
It's so good.
It's so funny.
Okay, so I guess to pretend like you've seen it,
you should know it's about Peter O'Toole's in it.
Yes, you should know Peter O'Toole is in it. I think you should know that there was, like, Mel Brooks' production company did it.
Yeah, I was reading a couple things about this, because I told you originally, mm-hmm. and then I just saw something on IMDb. There was a story floating around that this is based off Mel Brooks' time on your show of shows, mm-hmm. and his dealings with Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
And possibly, like, John Barrymore, who is also, like, a raging alcoholic. Like, those kind of people coming onto the show. But Mel Brooks has said that the writers had very little interaction with the stars.
Yeah.
So would that have happened? You know? So it's not necessarily like that is Mel Brooks. Yeah. That is Errol Flynn.
But I think, like, aspects of the character, you know, it's like, oh, it was based on him.
Right. You know, like King Kaiser, Sid Caesar.
Yeah. But I think you should know it was produced by his company.
Yep, it's a Brooks Film production. Or he was executive producer. I'm not sure Brooks Film was around.
What's a third?
Best drunk acting ever. Basic plot.
Yeah, I think basic plot was...
So just...
And basic plot being writer of a TV show is in charge of the star for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this film is pretty straightforward. I mean, the jokes are what make this film. Mm-hmm. The jokes make this film. The writing makes this film.
Yeah, because the plot is very simple.
Yeah.
The writer of a TV show has to follow around the crazy star, like a crazy movie star, for a week to make sure that he will appear on the show. That's the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no basic plot.
Yeah, I think that'll get you through it. Because, I mean, I do think this is probably the first film that we've done where not many people... I hadn't heard of this film until my dad was like,
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
But...
I never fully went out and got it.
This is the first one where neither of us have been like, yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. But I would highly recommend this mm-hmm. film. Like, I will invite you over to watch this film.
We will drag you to Brooklyn.
Where is this Brooklyn?
Land far away! But, yeah.
What happens in this Brooklyn?
So, this has been
You Haven't Seen!
I'm Debbie.
And I'm Ashley. As always, you can like us on iTunes, rate and review us on iTunes, and like us. Like, rate,
can
review.
Do you like on iTunes?
No.
I think you just review.
You just review?
You give the stars.
Okay.
Give us the stars!
This is Mario Party. I want those stars.
It's Mario Party.
It's Mario Party, the video game. You had to get the stars. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. You can check out our Twitter at @YHS_podcast and check out our Tumblr. I'm not sure how much stuff I'm going to find on this one. Mm-hmm. I've been having some trouble with it, but I'll try to pull some clips and stuff. Definitely the bathroom scene.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll try to pull those. And that is at youhaven'tseen-podcast.tumblr.com.
Yep.
And
join us for the next movie we're watching.
Yes. So the next movie is on April 10th, and that is a movie you haven't seen.
So we're watching Jurassic Park.
Lots of raptor impressions.
This is also important because I need to see Jurassic Park before the new one comes out, because I am obviously going to go see Chris Pratt and dinosaurs.
So our next film is on April 10th, and it's Jurassic Park. First one in the, we're not doing Jurassic World.
No, we're Jurassic just doing Park. Jurassic Park.
Yeah. So, we'll see you then. Thank you so much for listening.
Farewell.
Bye.